Welcome to Good Dogs. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host Carol Borden, who founded and runs Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs, where they breed, raise, and train and place these companion working dogs with people who need them, and all for no cost. We both believe that all dogs can be good dogs, but that dog training starts with people training. And the better you understand your dog, the better you can communicate with them and make them the best canine citizens they can be. This is not specifically a training show. It's also understanding dogs from the outside in, how to read their body language and what they're telling you, and from the inside out, to know that each dog's an individual and needs to be seen as such and lived with alongside us with joy and compassion. I have a fantastic guest to talk to. I cannot wait to pick her brain. She's a puppy evaluator with the Right Paw out of Princeton, Massachusetts. Her name's Mallory Gallitzer-Levy, but I selfishly can't wait to talk to her because guess whose brand new puppy Mallory recently evaluated? Yes, that's me. We will talk more in the weeks ahead about why, how, and when I got this little Vizsla puppy. It's one of those sad, happy things where my Maisie has a really bad tumor in the muscle of her shoulder that's inoperable and is cancer and making her very lame and restricting her movement. So her time is limited. And I didn't want Wanda to be left alone because Wanda has never breathed a day of her life without 8 years of without Maisie having raised her. And I also wanted a new puppy to have a really spectacular older sister to raise her. And bless little Wanda Weimer on her heart, it's not Wanda. Wanda's the little sister. She's never going to really be good at being the big sister. So all of that explanation in order to say hello to Mallory, thank you for this amazing work you do. And you only knew Daisy as Purple because each of the litters that you evaluate for the really great breeders, i.e. really responsible, caring, dedicated breeders, they usually tie a little yarn around their neck of a different color, don't they? Is that the norm nowadays?
It depends on the breed. With Vizslas, where they're all fairly similar in color, the easiest way to tell everyone apart is to make sure that we have separate colors on their necks. I have worked with Staffordshire Terrier breeders where the puppies all had different markings and were easy to tell between.
Oh.
And they were less inclined to do something like that because they could easily pick them out by eye.
But isn't it considered inappropriate to give a puppy a name by the breeder since the person who is the ultimate parent is going to obviously want to pick a name of their own or not?
Again, it's that seems to be something that different breeders have different opinions on. So I've had breeders who did themes. So each puppy had a name in common
right.
with the theme that the
right.
litter was going home with.
Yeah.
And then once they got home, their new owners picked their real name. And I've had people who just went with colors. It just seems to depend on a personal choice from the breeder, really.
Okay, so on my show Good Dogs years ago, and I'm going to be reviving a lot of those conversations, I had the Avidog breeders who did the kind of serious breeding that a lot of the people that you do evaluations for do, where they look at mm-hmm. bloodlines, they look at temperament of parents and grandparents, and they make these very careful breeding decisions. And then they have a litter on the ground. And at 4 or 5 or 6 weeks old, they had systems of how to evaluate the various temperament qualities of a puppy. And we end recipients of puppies often think temperament. You mean, are they nasty or nice? I'm just playing devil's advocate. There's a great deal more subtlety, but I think when most people hear the word temperament testing, they're like, okay, is that puppy going to be a mean biter or a sweet licker? So really, when you talk about puppy evaluation, it's incredibly much more subtle. But can you talk about the ways that what you're looking for and the ways you kind of tease out those qualities of a baked in, wired in personality of a puppy?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the first thing that's really important to say is that there is no bad puppy. There are no puppies in the litter that I look at as less than or puppies that I look at as better than. It's all about trying to figure out who each individual puppy is
mm-hmm.
so that when we look at the people who have come to us looking for puppies, we can say, hey, this puppy is really going to fit well into your lifestyle. For instance, one of the tests that I do is a test where I hold the puppy and I take the skin between their toes and I put pressure on that skin for up to 10 seconds. And I increase the pressure up to 10 seconds and wait and see when the puppy responds. I have puppies who immediately yank their foot away from me, and I have puppies who never notice that I did it at all.
No kidding.
Often, that's telling me touch sensitivity. How sensitive are you to physical contact and physical interaction? How comfortable are you going to be with rough housing, with people touching you, with leash sensitivity? How are you going to take having a leash on when you're walking with your owner? I take that into consideration a lot of times when I'm thinking about placing puppies in families with children. If I have a puppy who has very low touch sensitivity, I want to consider that, because if you have young kids, they may trip on the puppy, fall on the puppy, step on the puppy. And I want to make sure that the puppy, I would rather place a puppy who is less inclined to notice or be upset about that than a puppy who is going to be quick to go, oh, what did you do to me?
Yes.
Another test that I do is one where we do, I often do Volhard testing. It's a pretty common system. It's been around since the mid 60s. It's one of the ones you see most often used. There are a couple other versions of puppy testing, but Volhard is sort of the most ubiquitous across breeders.
Let me interrupt for a second. Is the Volhard the one with the rubber hand that takes the puppy's food away? Or is that really used in shelters to see if dogs food guard? I've always disliked that one, but we could have a whole show discussing how you feel about the one where the doll walks in, the life-size doll, and how does the dog react. But that isn't about puppies. That's about grown dogs, right, that are in a shelter and need to be rehomed.
Yes, that's a shelter test.
Okay. Yep. So the Volhard test is a kind of more subtle science, would you say?
Yeah, it's very specifically for puppies. And I will say, I think that the Volhard test has its value, but it also has its drawbacks. It's fairly vague. So the answer is your puppy can be scored from a 1 to a 5. 1 tends to be on the more confident end. 5 tends to be on the less confident end. But the descriptors are very short. So a lot of times when you're doing this testing, the responses the puppy have don't actually fall into the way that they, into the descriptors that they give you for that 1 to 5 number. And so the tester sort of has to make a judgment call. Do I think the puppy is uncomfortable? Do I think the puppy is afraid? Do I think the puppy honestly was distracted by something else in the environment and isn't actually upset at all?
That's
just
funny.
Saw something shiny and walked away.
That's hilarious.
And so those are pieces that we're really looking at in those responses, which is the place that I feel that Volhard can fall down. I will say that I am currently developing my own puppy test that I think will work better for me personally when I'm trying to evaluate, so that I can give more information to the breeders that I work with. So, you know, check back with me next year and hopefully I'll have
that's a great answer, because something that's been around for decades came out of an environment in which we collectively understood so very little about dog behavior, dog sentience, dog. It was probably a much more crude tool than something that you have refined with a lot of subjectivity from having seen hundreds of puppies and trying to look for those qualities that will have something to do with what kind of a companion they'll be for the people looking for dogs. So what's the one with the umbrella? You sent me a picture of a Wisla puppy with the umbrella, and it was like, I imagined it was like you open the umbrella to see how does the puppy react to, like, surprise. But how does that really work? Is that how that works?
That test is what we would refer to a bounce back test. It's normally the last one that you do in the Volhard testing. You wait until the puppy is distracted, and then you pop open an umbrella and you drop it on the ground. And you see how the puppy chooses to respond to the sudden stimulation that you have provided. So, and what we're looking for is puppies, all animals can get spooked.
Sure.
Like a big surprising thing, it's fine for your puppy to go, oh, what was that? What we're looking to see is how quickly does the puppy move past the initial surprise, and where do they go? Do they go to curious investigation? Do they come to me as a person and say, hey, how do I feel about this? Are you okay with it? Oh, okay, let's go check it out together.
Mm-hmm.
Does the puppy avoid it and stay in the far corner of the room and go, mm-mm, that
no
thing
thanks.
Could eat me. I think I'm not going to go near it. And so that's that kind of bounce back test. I have worked a lot with service dog organizations and service dog puppies. That's how I got my start in puppy testing, was testing litters dog work. And the bounce back test is one of the really important ones for service dogs, because they see so many novel things out in public. And we need a puppy that's going to go, they're allowed to look at it and go, oh, what was that? But we need a puppy that will quickly go, you say it's okay, so it must be fine.
You like that. That's better than the puppy who just goes and goes, let me go see what that's all about, boss, as opposed to coming back to the boss being the human and saying, how shall we deal with this, human?
Well, and some of that depends on the type of service dog that you wanted. If I'm looking for a seeing eye dog, I need him to be able to handle that without my interference, because I may not be able to help him. I won't see it in front
of him. That's right.
But for a traditional service dog, a social service dog, a dog that's working really interactively with their people, I want those dogs to go, I think you have this, so I don't have to worry about it. So I'm just going to go along with what you say.
So for a pet dog, I wish that when I had gotten Wanda as a puppy, which I got as a puppy because Maisie didn't like adult dogs entering our house. I mean, even dogs she'd been out running and romping and playing with, if they tried to come in the house, it was not a happy moment. So that's just something I learned about her. And I tried to adopt a male Weimaraner thinking, oh, she'll be okay with a big male. And she wasn't, not even a little bit. So I got a puppy from what turned out to be a horrible breeder. Just, so many people have this. They say all the right things. They answer all the right questions. Mm-hmm. And they lie through their teeth. And the puppy had a horrible beginning. There was no real thought that went into who her parents were or what their health was like. The tail was docked incorrectly. She had white toenails from malnutrition. She was incredibly ill for the first 2 weeks. And she's very fearful. Now, I've always wondered about this hard wiring of a dog. Mm-hmm. If they have a physically compromised beginning, for whatever the reason, does that sometimes affect their personality, or is it hardwired? I mean, I've always thought she was that girl. She trembles at thunderstorms, even though her older sister, Maisie, never has trembled a day in her life. She feels worried about new people and things, and she hangs back and her hair goes up and she has to sniff them first. Is that dog and that puppy in the corner that you're referring to?
It can be. Some of this, how much of it is her, and how much of it is her beginning, and how much of it were her experiences, all of that is a little bit subjective, especially, again, you talk about the service dog experience that I've had. I've had dogs that were really well socialized and worked with a puppy raiser for years, and they fail from the program because the sight of toddlers turns them into a puddle on the ground. And I've had people donate dogs who lived in their basements. They never did a thing in their lives, and they just said, this is too much dog for me. You go, do you guys want it? And these dogs who've never seen anything come out of that space and go, I can handle anything.
That's such a great example.
Look at me go.
Yeah. That's a great example. So the rule about, make sure your dog meets at least 100 different people that look 100 different ways and wear 100 different clothes. And I did all that with Wanda. I took her to doctor's offices with me. I saw people on a stroller, people with a cane, people of different nationalities, a man with a hat, a man with a beard. I did all that. She's not interested in new people, okay? She hit puberty. Exactly. She was like, no, that's okay. Let's just lead the reclusive Vermont life. I'm good with you guys. It's interesting. So that dog could live in a basement, no stimulation, no input, and have this rock solid inner core confidence or balance. Isn't that amazing? So for people who don't have the luxury, puppy buyers who don't have the luxury of a professional puppy evaluator, is that something they should really be asking the breeder? And I understand this is 1% of 1%, because most people nowadays want to do rescue. There's not that many dogs available for rescue as back in the day. And I don't mean pre-COVID. I mean, really back in the day.
But
they know not to buy from a pet store, because you're buying a dog that came from very dubious background, and the parents live in a horrible situation, and nobody bred them with anything particular in mind other than pumping out a lot of puppies. But if they're able to find a breeder who they talk to on the phone, how do they ask about puppy evaluation? Because some breeders think they've done it themselves, but they don't do it the way you do it, methodically. They just do it kind of randomly. Oh, this one is more forward and that one's more of a shrinking violet. What should people ask?
I mean, I think it's also important to say that part of what I do at the end of my evaluation is I then talk to the breeder about what I've seen versus what they've seen, because it is important for me to remember and for them to remember that this is one day in a puppy's life.
Right.
And just like all of us, some puppies have bad days.
Yes.
So I've had puppies test very poorly, honestly. And the breeder looks at me and says, that's not who this puppy is. I've seen this puppy for 8 weeks.
That's cool.
This is not who this puppy is. And so it's really, and honestly, they have seen them for 8 weeks and I haven't. So sometimes I see things that they don't, and I can give them a good idea of, hey, you know, one of the tests is that I flip the puppy over for 30 seconds and then I release them and then I pet them gently and kind of try to be friends with them and see how quickly they are willing to forgive me. You know, I didn't like that you did that. Are you still? And so if I have a puppy who's very slow to forgive, again, we go back to that touch sensitivity, another puppy that I may not want to place in a family with kids.
Right.
Because that puppy, if it got hurt, may hold a grudge. And we don't want that. If you've got a 2-year-old running around, that's not a great puppy for you to have. So I'm probably going to place that puppy with an adult or with a couple or someone who we don't have to worry so much about those types of accidents, because the puppy isn't as fast to get over it. But again, those are insights that I want to talk to the breeder about and say, hey, this is what I'm seeing. Does this match what you've seen? Talk to me about what you've seen. I don't get that information in the beginning because I don't want to taint my evaluation, but I definitely want to hear what they've seen and what they know, because they live and breathe these puppies for so long that they are absolutely going to have insights that I may not have seen during the test.
That is a fascinating. It really does take a village to figure out who this little guy is. And maybe with the months ahead, some other aspect of the personality may emerge. Nothing is written in stone. I mean, DNA
for
is
sure.
a destiny, and personality emerges. And one of the many reasons that spay neuter should be put off for as long as you comfortably can is because personality emerges as a dog goes through puberty and gets hormones, right? I mean, that affects who they are as well. Oh, Mallory, we've run out of time. The right paw in Princeton, Mass, if you've gotten a puppy and it didn't get evaluated, I'm sure you can call and it's worth it to go there. And I'm guessing that Mallory will give you some feedback on your puppy that will tell you a little bit more about who you've got and how to give them the best possible life. Mallory, thanks for evaluating Daisy. We'll talk about her off the air, and maybe we'll do a show where you just tell me about her after I've met her. Thank you so much for being here. And the great work you do behalf of all the little squirmy things that turn into big, beautiful dogs. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.